Hey, San Diego and listeners everywhere. This is the Name Drop San Diego podcast, and I'm Abby Hamblin. Christy Totten is my co-host. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Andrew Strong is a Navy veteran and longtime San Diego County government worker. He's held a number of jobs with the county before taking his most recent as director of San Diego County's new Office of Equity and Racial Justice. The office was established in June of 2020 to identify systemic bias within county government. On this episode, we talked to Andrew about some of the work he's already doing there, as well as his family history in the fight for racial justice. Medgar Evers is his father's cousin. He was a civil rights and NAACP leader who investigated the murder of Emmett Till and worked for the desegregation of the University of Mississippi and other civil rights issues before his assassination in 1963. I encourage you to go read up more on his story. We also want to let you know we recorded our interview the day after former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all three counts in a jury trial over the killing of George Floyd. So we definitely talk about that on this episode. And now, without further ado, here's our interview with Andrew Strong.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining us and congratulations on your new job. I wanted to start by asking you about the guilty verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial that happened yesterday. You know, so much has happened over the past year since the death of George Floyd. How are you feeling about this verdict?
Yeah, and you know, that was a very profoundly emotional day for me personally, my family, my kids, my coworkers, you know, the citizens. And, you know, and for me, it's interesting. It was more of an emotional roller coaster for me, right, all day. And when the verdict came in, you know, I immediately thought of like Philando Castillo and, you know, Breonna Taylor. You know, I thought of the people who haven't gotten justice yet. I thought I would be more, you know, I thought I'd be happier, right, in that moment, you know, but it took some time for me to build up to that because I think it's important for us to keep at the forefront of our mind that this is the beginning. You know, even thinking about, you know, how people say justice. And I was struck by some of the speakers yesterday when they said that justice hasn't been served yet, right? And that, you know, we have to get through the sentencing phase, and, you know, and after that, there are others that we need to make sure we take into consideration and fight for. So it was, you know, I'm feeling like it was a very emotional day, still lingering, right? But at the same time, I am ecstatic for the family of George Floyd and the citizens of that city. So, you know, they fought for that, you know, and the jury listened. So
how does what happened with George Floyd and the sort of national conversation around racial equity and police reform inform, you know, what happens right here in San Diego County and how you do your job in San Diego County? Like, how does that factor in?
You know, I think it factors in immensely. I think, you know, we can learn from all over this country, you know, not to mention the world in some spaces. You know, and so the lessons learned, how we prosecuted that case, you know, thinking about the different reforms that may be in place because of what happened to George Floyd, you know, I think it's Angel Hernandez who lost his life, you know, via the MTS officers recently, and we just settled on that case, or MTS settled on that case. You know, it was very similar, right, to the George Floyd murder. And, you know, thinking about what reforms we could take from whatever the city of, you know, Minneapolis is putting into place, how does that impact us here? You know, I think it's very important for us to consider that. And in my specific role as the Office of Equity and Racial Justice, we're still trying to figure out what that looks like as far as my level of influence, right, in the public safety area, because you have the Sheriff's Department, right? You have the District Attorney's Office, you have the Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board, right? And I'm not going to direct the sheriff, who's an elected official, to do anything, right? But we can work to find restorative justice programs, grants, right, to make significant changes within the department, you know, and make sure we provide as much resources as possible and use those best practices across the nation to inform that.
So your job is to work across departments in San Diego County to identify systemic bias. What do you see as the biggest inequities that we're facing here in San Diego?
Oh man, I think housing is a huge one, right? And homelessness, when you're thinking about the disparities of African-American population within the homeless population and how it is not close, right, to matching what the actual census data says for African-Americans within our region. When you're thinking about income, the income gap, I mean, education, those are some significant inequities that are foundational, right? Foundational to making sure that we address the school to prison pipeline, right? And we make sure that kids are getting into those, you know, suspended, you know, for you know, detention and things like that. They're putting our youngsters into that pipeline. And specifically within the county of San Diego, local government agency, we have a lot of work to do to get our house in order. You know, I think we have to make sure that we are a much more culturally competent organization, not to mention just race and equity, but thinking about our LGBTQ, you know, and making sure that we get our own house in order as far as equity, racial justice, and budget equity, right? As you're thinking about our resource allocation and how we've maybe putting resources into public safety, right? Maybe it's time to shift some of those resources into other areas to make sure we're being more proactive and providing different types of services so people aren't needing to be in those situations.
So it's not lost on us, and it shouldn't be on anyone. You kind of alluded to this earlier that, you have to carry into your job that you are a Black man in America. You know, you're dealing with this as a family member, as just a resident of San Diego County as well and of this country. What has it been like kind of bringing that personal aspect into your job, which is, it's a hard enough job, but to do it as someone who, you know, has faced racism and is the exact person we're trying to make San Diego better for, I mean, that's heavy.
You know, and I really appreciate that question, Abby. I've been in the county for 13 years, right? I've been in local government and specifically county government. And over the past year, it's interesting how the conversation has evolved, right, with racial justice and equity, specifically when you're talking about Black Lives Matter, right? When just a couple of years ago, you couldn't say that word in certain spaces, and now everyone's saying it, right? And for years, the silence for me was deafening when these things happen, right? When Black lives are lost at the hands of police officers. You know, but just yesterday, when I co-wrote a statement with our CAO, right, to send out to our employees, you know, about the George Floyd verdict, and that's a land shift and change, right? So for me, I am honored to have been in leadership positions. I started off in the county as a non-paid student worker when I was getting out of the Navy, right? As I've come up in the county and been in certain leadership positions, I felt that weight on my shoulders, right, to actually lead in a certain way, but also to be representative, right, of my people, but to also give back as much as I possibly can.
Part of your job is looking at hiring, policies, contracting practices. How would you grade the county right now for racial equity? If you had to grade them, what grade would you give it, and what are you trying to do in your new position?
That requires a whole level of analysis, Christy, so I'll give it my best shot. I would give us a C, maybe a C minus, to say the truth. I honestly would. I think we've only scratched the surface of where we need to go, to say the truth. We've done a lot of performative type work, right? We've put out our diversity and inclusion strategic plan, right? We've done a lot of training in that space. We have our employee resource groups. But we just now, we're adding equity and belonging into our vision, mission, and values for the county, right? And as a part of that, we're not just adding it, we're not just drafting the language and putting it out there. We've taken it to our employees, right, to get feedback on what that looks like and how does it show up for them, right, in everyday job. And at the same time, we're going to take it to our Human Relations Commission for feedback. Right, because we want community input, and those two feedback loops are, especially for this type of work, are brand new for the county. Like, we haven't traditionally taken these types of things, right, enterprise wide, to our employees and to our constituents, and that's a new way of thinking, and that way of thinking has to be replicated across all of our business operations. So we've had pockets where. Well, we've been doing that for years, like HHSA, our Health and Human Services Agency, You know, they've been great at doing that, taking it to the community, but not necessarily our purchasing and contracting folks, right? Like, we just now started to include much more so into the community process, getting feedback on developments that we're building in certain communities, right? That's a new process for us. So we have a lot of work to do. I give us a C minus.
So you sort of talked about when you first came into the county, but we read in a column that our colleague Charles Clark wrote about you that one of the very first thing you did when you came to the county is work on freshening up the county's diversity and inclusion training program, he said. So what have you seen change since then? And clearly, you said there's a lot of work to be done, but how has the cultural shift really affected what you've seen from way back then to now?
Yeah, and to be really honest with you, when I first came into the county, you know, we weren't going to be talking about structural racism, right, and breaking that down and talking about what systemic racism is, and then talking about specifically that we're going to own, right, that there are systemically racist policies, right, or structurally racist policies that may have been put into place 20 years ago that we haven't touched, and we're going to do something about those. Right. And a great example of that was when the new board came in, led by Supervisor Fletcher over the past few months. You know, there were some policies, there were legislative policies that immediately came in that were having to do with immigration. Right. And some were having to do with maternity leave. Right. Things of that nature that we would lobby against as an organization that we immediately got rid of. Right. I mean, those are significant shifts in how we do policy and operations in our county. And, you know, 10 years ago, we weren't talking about that. We were talking about, just like I was saying, more of the performative type work, but not really substantive changes within government, right? And I've had the pleasure to kind of come up in government and see those different changes over time. And I'm very excited to see where we're going, because significant opportunity to make some change.
Have you experienced any pushback on DEI work, you know, whether it's from within the county or outside?
Yes. That's kind of the nature of, I think, a lot of this work, to tell you the truth. You'll walk into spaces and, you know, if I say white privilege, you know, you'll meet some people in the room will immediately shut down or have pushback, right? I think we were just in a different paper, right? Article or somebody who said that we were talking about white privilege in this space is enforcing people to take certain trainings. So, you know, you're going to get pushback when it comes to equity, diversity, and inclusion work. So it's the nature of the business.
Well, not just like in your day-to-day job either, but like in the national kind of political conversation, you're seeing that pushback too. Like, what would you say to those people who just feel like this isn't necessary, you know, say those just, you know, are just completely unwilling to accept that systemic racism is an issue?
You know, I would invite them to the table to have a conversation, you know, and I think those are the most important people we really need to talk to, right? Because a lot of those folks have influence in certain spaces where we don't walk. And I think it's very important for us to include those folks in a conversation, and not necessarily even to try to influence them to change their mind, but to get to understand their perspective so you can influence others, right? I mean, that's, you know, that there's a profound aspect of involving all mindsets at the table. And that's one of the things we actually did as we were standing up our diversity inclusion executive or diversity inclusion strategic plan. We invited all aspects, right? Folks who didn't buy into what we were doing, because we wanted to understand those perspectives. You absolutely have to. So that's what I would do. I would invite them to the table and have a conversation and try to explain and talk about facts, right? Talk about historical context and why, you know, things like redlining, why that continues to influence and impact neighborhoods and education to this day, and why there are things that we could do and need to do to address those issues, right? So, you know, start with facts, but invite them to the table.
Has equity and inclusion always been an important, you know, part of your career? I know you've held a lot of jobs, but, you know, really, when did you start really thinking about this and working on this?
I'm originally from Shreveport, Louisiana, equity, I would say racial justice more so has been a part of the fabric of who I am for forever. My dad was in the Air Force. He was in Vietnam, and his first cousin, Zemeca Evers, I'm not sure that if you know that, that's he was a civil rights activist leader, NAACP in Mississippi. He was assassinated in front of his home. And, my dad would tell stories about, conversations he had with him and how that influenced his life. Growing up in the South, we have families on the Oakland Plantation in Natchitoches, Louisiana, where it's right on the Cane River. And that's where my mom's side of the family's from. And, that plantation is a national park, right? And my ancestors who were enslaved, there are pictures of my ancestors in some of the slave shacks. And the reason why we have family reunions there is so that our family could tell us about the importance of our history, right? And that it didn't just start with slavery, it started before we came to this country. So, all that has kind of been imparted to me over time, but specifically in my career, when I came into the county, I mentioned that one of the first things that they asked me to do was to kind of dust off the diversity and inclusion training for the county and do work in that space. And the first thing I noticed was how conservative of an approach, right, that we had to take based on the environment. And at that moment, that gave me a passion to make mental notes along my career, right, to try to do things as much as I could behind the scene to make changes, until I was able to get into a position to where I could actually do something substantive.
You mentioned that you had kids, right? Are they a couple kids, one kid?
Yeah, I have two kids. Yeah, I have a 12-year-old and a 20-year-old. Yeah, and my son's about to graduate from Southwestern College with his associates.
Oh, congrats. Yeah.
Thanks.
Awesome. I was going to ask, have you had the opportunity to take them to family reunions there and do
absolutely.
You kind of pass on what your dad passed on to you, to your own kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a must. And you know, I actually lost my mom last year, May 6th. And there's a picture that I carry with me with my mom and my daughter when they were on, standing on the plantation together. Right. And it's just profound to me to see the generations. Right. I mean, my sister was there, too. And, just to see the generations of Black women specifically, so it's absolutely share that with my family.
What has been your experience with racism in the South versus San Diego?
I think the biggest thing that I've seen in the South is much more in your face. It's much more blatant. I live in, grew up in Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana. My dad still lives there with my sister in the same house where we grew up in. And across the street, it's a multiracial neighborhood that we lived in. And across the street, there's a guy, he has a Confederate flag, right, flying on the pole, right? So it's much more in your face in the South. If you ask me out here in San Diego, I would say that it's, there's a lot of historical racism. I think there are policies, procedures, I think there are things that are not so much in your face, right? Things are done behind the scenes. And I'm not saying that it's rampant by any means, right, out in San Diego, but it's definitely not in your face here in San Diego. With the exception of why this office was created back in last year, which is because you had people walking around with swastikas on their masks, and you had people walking around with Klan hoodies out in East County in 2020, right? So with those subtle exceptions, I think.
Well, thanks for sharing that stuff with you, and very sorry to hear about your mom. Glad you've had some really special experiences with your kids, and hopefully they love San Diego as much as we do. Let's talk a little bit more about your Navy experience, if we can, just getting to know you more. So according to your LinkedIn, you served as hospital corpsman for 9 years from 98 to 07. So that would be there for the beginning and height of the War on Terror. And so we just thought we'd ask if you went to Iraq or Afghanistan during your time.
Just on board a ship. I was stationed on board the USS Ronald Reagan, and we did several deployments in the Persian Gulf, and did some time in theater there on the USS Ronald Reagan. But I was never deployed with the Marines during the War on Terror. So. but I was stationed with the Marines in North Carolina and did some time with them and have what they call Havelock, North Carolina, and MCS Cherry Point Marine Corps Air Station in North Carolina.
Well, I know that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chrissy.
I was going to say nine.
No, I'm sorry. You go. I'm sorry. You
go. 9 years is a long time. You know, yeah. What did you do during that time? What are some of your proudest accomplishments?
Yeah, you know, I was actually, I had what they call an NEC in an eight when I was a corpsman, and I was a radiation health technician, which is one of the reasons why I was stationed on board USS Ronald Reagan. But I think one of my proudest accomplishments is when I was in a submarine base, Bangor, Washington, and we had this thing called the START Treaty. And this is where we would have our Russian counterparts come and inspect our nuclear weapons, right? And we have our, you know, and then some of our leadership and officers would go to Russia and inspect nuclear weapons. But just being able to be a part of those conversations and facilitate that, so the development of the relationship between those folks was huge for me. Thinking about coming from the South and then being exposed to that type of environment. You know, but also being a corpsman, you impact folks' lives, right? And sometimes you save lives. And being an EMT, you know, whether it's stationed on the base or being on the ship, there are several experiences where we had to provide life-saving measures in those instances.
So. Yeah, I know that hospital corpsmen are particularly known for being able to do anything. Even dentistry, like the list of things that you can and have to do is pretty crazy. So I wondered if you have any wild medical stories to share.
I do, but
he's like,
that's a tough one. It's ingrained in me, right? and it's funny you mentioned the dental piece because before I got out, we were separate. You had the dental technicians and you had the hospital corpsman. And once I got out, I think a short period after that, they merged the two together. And now it's like dental techs, hospital corpsman. So I never did any dental work. I was all medical.
There's still time. well, we want to do a lightning round with you. Is that okay? Just like a few questions about some of your favorite stuff. The first one is, what is your favorite place to go in San Diego?
Oh, my favorite place to go in San Diego. Wow, I'd say the beach. I love going to the beach. One of my favorite either the beach or Sunset Cliffs, beautiful, just a beautiful scenery. I'm a sucker for beautiful, beautiful scenery.
There's a lot of that here.
Yeah.
What is your favorite band or musician?
Favorite band and musician, Mint Condition. I don't know if y'all know that group, but you should look them up. It's R&B group. And I'd say my favorite musician, in addition to that, would be Babyface. Very talented man. He's written so many songs for a whole lot of people.
Love it. What was your first job?
My first job, my dad actually owned, when he got out of the military, he owned his own cleaning service. And of course, his kids were his workers, right? So right? Yeah, so my first job was actually working for my father in his cleaning business. Yeah.
Wow, that's really hard work.
Right.
What would you say is the most overrated food that you just don't like?
Overrated food. Wow. That's a tough one because I love to eat. Overrated food.
Or just something you don't like. Is there anything you don't like?
Anything I don't like. Let's see. I don't like crab legs. I'm not a big crab leg person. Oh. Yeah. I don't like, my wife loves crab legs, but I am not a crab leg person.
Is that like, what is like the staple Louisiana food? Isn't it a lot of crab and
crawfish?
Seafood?
Crawfish.
Wow, interesting.
But it is seafood, yes. Yeah, it is seafood. But never been a big crab leg person or freshwater. I love freshwater seafood, like catfish, right? Shrimp.
Our last guest was a local fisherman and former commercial fisherman, but he's starting a seafood market. So
oh, wow.
More fish content for our listeners. What do you miss the most about Louisiana?
What do I miss the most? I think it's the food. Well, my family first, of course. My family first. But I think it's the food second.
Good answer. If they're listening, they'll be happy to hear that.
Yeah.
If you had to put one item to represent yourself into a time capsule, what would it be?
One item. These are some really tough questions.
Sorry.
These are the tough ones, not the ones about my job.
Yeah. It's funny to see, you know, some people are really comfortable with these and some people are, you know, struggle.
Yeah, my brain wasn't working this way.
But they should be easy. They should be easy.
Yeah. There's so many things I want to tell people about myself in 100 years. let's see. I think, wow, that's a tough one. About myself. Wow. Because I always think about my family, right? So I always want to put maybe just, you know, just a lineage, right? Just, you know, how we got to today. You know, make sure whoever sees that, you know, 20 or however long the time capsule knows the history. So yeah.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah. The history and the detail. Some of the things we talked about today, right? Like some of the things that my dad did, or, you know, his cousin did, and my grandma, like the history.
What place do you want to travel to most that you've never been to?
Wow, what place do I want to travel to most? I would say Rome. Yeah. I think I want to go to Rome.
Me too.
Yeah. Are you into history?
I am a history buff. I love history. Yep. You have to know our context, right? Got to know where we came from and the mistakes not to make again.
Absolutely. Okay, who is your hero?
Who is my hero? I would say it's my mom. I think it's my mom. Personally, she was so strong for so many years, and did so many things, right? In a time when, you know, she got her bachelor's degree and her master's degree from Wiley College in Texas, which was an all-women school, but, you know, it was all-women school at the time, but it ended up being co-ed. And, you know, and during those times when it was a lot of racism going on back then, right? It was a struggle just to try to make it. And, you know, she did so many things for so long.
Last one is, well, actually, I want to ask you what food you did like, because we kind of asked you what you don't like. And since you're a foodie, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food, I'm a steak guy. Okay. I love a good ribeye.
Can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong. Well, you can go wrong.
That's true. Wait, how do you like it cooked?
I'm a medium well guy. Medium well.
That's me too, although I don't want my grandpa listening to hear that.
Okay, final question.
Yeah, go Chrissy.
Final question. What is the best advice you've ever gotten?
The best advice I've ever gotten is not to take myself too seriously. Right? And I think that just it's a simple and yet profound statement, because it'll help you get through so many different aspects of life.
Yeah.
That's good advice. Okay, so you have worked in a lot of positions within the county, and that includes in the chief administrative office. So if somebody knows what it's like in there, it should be you. What do you say to people who, you know, just kind of picture it as this big sort of bureaucratic, slow-moving engine? You know, having been inside, how would you kind of explain what it's like and what you've taken from kind of working your way through it?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're real people, first of all, right? And, you know, too often I think, you know, people use the term unelected bureaucrats, right? You know, and, you know, don't let them make all decisions, but these are real public servants that are, you know, committed to doing this work and spend a whole lot of time trying to get it right. And so I think that we're human beings, right? Is specifically in those executive offices, sometimes that gets lost. But I would say about the slow bureaucratic process, it absolutely is a slow bureaucratic process. And one of the reasons why is because we're supposed to be stewards, right, of the taxpayers' dollars and stewards of the public good. So a lot of times, you know, we do analysis after analysis after analysis, study after study, to try to make sure we get it right. And I think one of the things we're going through right now is this culture change to be okay with making certain risks, taking certain risks that we would not have taken in the past, and knowing that we're not going to get it right all the time, not going to get it right the first time, and knowing that we're doing things differently. So it's going to take time to perfect it, right? So I would say yes, it's a slow bureaucratic process, but there are reasons for that. You know, we want to be good stewards, but also, you know, these are human beings, man. And I got to say, I've never been more comfortable around people than I have been within the CAO's office, right? And it's been a great experience working with our CAO.
What advice do you have for people listening when it comes to addressing systemic racism in their own lives? You know, what can individuals do to help?
You know, I think we got to pay attention to what's in front of our face more often than not. And I think we need to be more comfortable being uncomfortable in situations. People like me, people who've been discriminated against, experience racism, blatant, right, and subliminally. We're uncomfortable a lot in a lot of spaces, and I think that we need to be intentional about getting uncomfortable, but also being able and willing to start calling things for what they are. Those are the things we need to make sure that we do as individuals, but also champion and fight, right, for what's right when you see something wrong. You know, it's okay to do that. And it's also okay to do it in different ways, right? You don't also always have to be the protester in the street, but you should maybe call into the board meeting, right, and say two words about this project 100 or whatever it might be that you feel is absolutely wrong, or send a letter, right, to your board office. You know, there are different things that we can do. You don't always have to be that person out in the street holding the sign, although, you know, you need those folks. Right? We need all those aspects.
Thank you, thank you, thank you to Andrew Strong for sharing some deeply personal stories with us and having an important conversation about racial equity and justice in this country, and especially here in San Diego County. If this is an important subject to you, we encourage you to check out episode 47 with Joanne Fields and episode 22 with Dr. DJ Gaines, just to name a few. We've talked to so many interesting San Diegans for this show, so please give our lineup a look and see if there are other episodes you'd want to hear. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by searching Name Drop San Diego to see who we'll be talking to next. Thanks for listening. Bye.